Do you hear that?
I don't hear anything.
Well, as Hans would say, that would be the sound of Nick not screeching.
Welcome to Gay Talk 2.0, the ultimate podcast for your dose of dish.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of Gay Talk 2.0, the ultimate podcast, streaming live on digital stream radio. You can listen live every Monday at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time by visiting digitalstreamradio.com. My name is Tom, and I am your host. And as always, I'm here with my amazing co-host, Minus One, starting with our first one, which is the guest host for today.
Hey, everyone, it's Patrick.
And
good to be with you guys. It's Chris.
And welcome you all to
The Dish. Nailed it.
Yes.
I've only been listening for like 3 years.
And we've only been here for two.
It's amazing. You know, so I do have to say, yes, Nick is on vacation. He went down to Florida to visit his family. I can't hear myself. So we had Patrick join us to fill in and be here with the boys. So thank you.
Thanks for having me.
It's amazing. You're always so amazing to have on the show anyway.
It's just because I make fun of everybody.
you just have so many like variations of yourself. Like, you know, you're Patrick, and then you're also the director of the New Haven Pride Center, and you also do Kiki Lucia. And so we'll talk and we'll get into all those personalities and wonderful hats that you wear for our community.
Are you trying to say that I have multiple personality disorder?
Something perhaps. Like that. She needs pills. She needs something.
They make a pill for everything these days.
They do.
So, as usual, we always drink while we're on the show. And today we got a little, so I'm going to let Christopher take this one and tell you guys what we're having.
This one's a very intricate one, so I need everyone to keep up. Take out your notepad. Be diligent. Taking notes diligently. Today's cocktail is the Lazy Vodka Soda. Yes, now, like I said, diligent notes here. Get your pens and paper ready. It consists of vodka and soda. Pour over ice. Enjoy.
That's it.
There it is.
Simple. And I think we've had this all three times on the show.
She's not fancy. We can throw it up together for
her. Well, no, it's not that, because Patrick really enjoys his vodka tonics. So,
I am a creature of habit.
So we have to please our guests. So we bought him some vodka and poured some tonic in there for him with some fresh squeezed lime. That's another cocktail that we can add to today's roster.
We'll go with that.
It's also a Lazy Vodka Tonic. But either way, we've got a very, very filled show. There's a lot of incredible news that's happening over the course of the weekend alone.
I do want to point out, just for the cocktail real quick, it's so funny, with Trish not here, we didn't need a gallon today. Like, we were okay. We were okay with the small bottle.
Oh, I hope she's not listening.
I hope she is listening.
I'm expecting a text message real soon.
Cursive is already coming out.
It's still a small bottle, but it's still vodka. So
we're literally like 5 minutes in.
And the award goes to this guy.
Winning. As always, actually, we're 3 minutes and 37 seconds into the show.
That is a new record here at Gay Talk 2.0.
I will
gladly accept the award.
Oh, Lord have mercy.
Somebody has to be Trish in the show.
She's it. She's it. What shall we call you?
Huh?
Huh? Yeah. We're going to call you, huh? Welcome, huh, to the show. Huh? Huh? As we said, we do have a very filled show. There's a lot of information, a lot of things that are happening that impact our community, and we're going to dissect and talk about those today. So I'm going to kick off the show, but before I do, it serves... Before we get started, I'd like to offer my condolences to the family of Linda Brown. And if you're not familiar with who she is, Linda Brown was at the center of Brown versus the Board of Education, which ended segregation in schools, back in the 60s. And it was a very, very important part of our history to integrate schools. Anyway, she was 75 years old, and to her family, may she rest in peace. Her fight in her ability to actually just stare at, you know, indifference in the face and just continue to just be strong and walk into that school and be a part of that fight just really made things just so much better for our, you know, community of people of color. And I think that there are a lot of people, you know, that participated and helped with that. But this was a very, very important time in our history, and it needs to be acknowledged.
Absolutely. It changed the United States.
Of course. So may she rest in peace. And this happened today. So, you know, it's just like literally like within the last hour, we've got a quick message saying that that she had passed. So my condolences to her family from all of us here at Gay Talk 2.0. And Trish, who's sitting in Florida somewhere, sipping on a Mai Tai, probably.
Probably.
Actually, she doesn't do rum. It's probably vodka with just a twist of lime. Perfect. So, all right. So we had, I wanted to open up the discussion to everyone here on the table, Patrick, Chris, myself. We had the March for Our Lives this weekend. What an incredible event. And I wanted to talk about it, but I wanted to get your perspectives on it and what you guys went through before I dive in and tell you how I felt about it. So why don't we start with you, Patrick? What did you think? What was going through your mind when you were watching what happened on Saturday transpire?
Yeah, for me, the thing that was really powerful is watching youth realize in a really productive way that they have an important voice in our society, and seeing them, you know, wherever you fall on the spectrum of gun control laws and your personal feelings about what kinds of weapons people should have access to, civilians should have access to. I think it's really powerful, you know, for me as a person that's in a leadership position in the nonprofit sector, to see the youth and the millennial generation, which are often equated to being lazy or being disinterested and disenfranchised from the political movements and from important issues that are of the topic of conversations of today. It was really important for me and really eye-opening for me to see them kind of take that moment. You know, as somebody who marched in the Women's March a couple of years ago, the first year, and have participated in numerous different marches and conversations and movements over the years, it was really powerful to see so many from the youth stepping forward and raising their voice and having it happen all over the country, but then also see my mother, who's a teacher, you know, marching with my stepfather, and who's a little bit more conservative, and our family dog, and my sister and her husband, and with their big umbrella that my mom came up with for the original Women's March, that has, you know, each panel on it says something different about different civil rights and issues that she is very passionate about. And as a teacher, she's extremely passionate about gun control laws. And it has very strong feelings about teachers being armed, as one can imagine.
As we have seen on several occasions in the past 2 weeks, where teachers have either hurt themselves or hurt students in the process.
Right. And like, you know, to be completely true, my mom knows how to shoot a gun. And, you know, my stepfather's a retired military member of the military. And so, you know, he takes her, my little sister, out to the gun range every now and then. They shoot like cans or whatever you do at the gun range. I've never been, so I don't know.
They do make targets.
You can shoot penises, but no, not really. I'm kidding.
But so, yeah, I mean, for me, I always find it really powerful when any group, particularly young people, stand up and say, no, this is what I believe, this is what I feel, this is what needs to change. You know, there's this cynical side of me that's like, all these politicians are just looking at the kids being like, oh, well, they can't vote for me right now anyway, so their voice doesn't matter, so I'm just going to keep doing what I'm doing.
And that's a shame.
It really is.
That in itself is a shame.
And a lot of these people who were marching will be eligible to vote in upcoming elections. You know, a lot of them will be approaching 18.
At least the next presidential election, if
exactly.
Nothing else.
Even with the midterm elections coming up, you know, some of these students are going to be turning 18 before the November elections come up this year, which will be a big difference when a lot of these, you know, governors or senators or congressmen will be up for re-election. They can have their voice heard. And obviously, I think it's incredible that all these students and adults were taking to the streets and protesting peacefully and casting their demands. But what I found, it's really great when people go out and they protest and they show their voice, but it's really the aftermath which is the most important, like how to react to it. And two of the ones that stood out to me the most was one. I don't know. I'm sure you guys know who Rick Santorum was. You know.
Oh, yes, God.
Of course. Yeah. I can't stand him. I mean, he's always on CNN. You know, I'm not watching the news as much lately, but he's always on CNN. And I got an update. I believe it was Saturday or Sunday. Rick Santorum, the former GOP senator, suggests students protesting for gun control would be better served taking CPR classes and preparing for active shooters instead, which I thought was absolutely ludicrous. He's basically saying, learn how to revive your friends because your school is going to get shot up.
Right.
We're not going to approach the problem. Just learn how to deal with it when it comes your way.
Right. He's such an ass.
Absolute bullshit.
I couldn't. I when I read that, I had to like stop reading halfway through the article because I got so mad.
Yeah, it's like, how can you even bring something to the table like that? That's not a solution. Telling your students someone's gonna get shot at. Someone's gonna try to kill you or your friend. It's gonna happen. So learn how to maybe revive them. That's disgusting.
I just think that, you know what, people like this just need to disappear.
Well, it's great that he's a former congressman, he's not making these laws anymore because
him try to become president again because he keeps running every time there's an opportunity.
Well, y'all go ahead, keep running, keep spending your money and not getting anywhere because you're not helping anyone. It was that, and then the rural school district in Pennsylvania, which is arming its students and teachers with buckets of rocks,
right,
as a last resort should an armed intruder burst in. Again, not approaching the issue here, just trying to fight back with reviving your friend that got shot and is bleeding out. Or trying to whip rocks at someone who's coming in with an assault rifle that he shouldn't have, he or she should not have their hands on in the first place.
It's just ridiculous, really.
Yeah, and we live in a state where obviously we've been extremely affected by gun violence.
Absolutely.
I mean, I actually went to school with one of the teachers at Sandy Hook, the one that actually told the shooter that all of her students were in the gym and had hid them all in the closet. She was one of my classmates at the University of Hartford. And, we obviously are affected by it. But one thing that I thought was very exciting was that, you know, many of the students that are being given a voice in this movement are white students. And I appreciated over the weekend reading the articles where many of those students, if not all of them, were specifically calling out the media for not covering the students of color that were equally affected and not handing a microphone to them and not bringing them out into the camera. And I forget which of the students it was, but their guest of honor was Martin Luther King's granddaughter, which mm-hmm. I thought was really a powerful moment in D.C. at least.
I thought it was, is his name David Hogg, I believe?
I think, yeah.
Yeah, if I'm not mistaken. He was one of the ones, he's very articulate. He's the one that's coming out. He's been in the forefront of the news coverage, coming out and talking about gun control reform and things of that nature. And really warning politicians, don't sleep on us because we're coming mm-hmm. and we're going to vote you out. And you know what? I believe it. And here's my personal take on the thing. We had Columbine, we had Virginia Tech, we had, Sandy Hook. And when we got to Sandy Hook, it should have happened then.
Right.
Yeah, that was a really awful thing.
When you think about sixth and seventh graders, it should have happened then, and it didn't. But then you start
Sandy
to analyze.
Hook, sixth and seventh graders?
6 and 7 year olds, excuse me.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
And it should have happened then.
Right.
But it didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And then you start asking why. And then you start really thinking about it. You know, these 6 and 7 year olds didn't have a way to express how they felt, right? And when you think about children that young, they sort of kind of, you know, when you're a brother or a sister of someone that you lost at school, you sort of kind of internalize that and you keep it inside. And it takes years of being able to speak to someone to get all of that out and say, this is how I feel, because they truly don't know yet
right
how they truly feel.
And the defense of Connecticut, Senator Murphy has been at the forefront since Sandy Hook has happened.
Absolutely.
A lot of people are not fans.
And we have law firms like Koskoff and Beter in Bridgeport, and, well, all over the state, but they're based in Bridgeport,
right,
like literally taking this fight as far as they can possibly go mm-hmm. and not caring that they, you know, are facing this, you know, crazy list of lawyers across the table. Mm-hmm. They're doing it because it's the thing to do. They don't care if they win or lose. They're doing it because it needs to be done.
Right, exactly. And Chris Murphy, I feel, is the same way. A lot of people have issues with Chris Murphy, and I know he wasn't maybe our best voice prior to Sandy Hook, but once Sandy Hook happened, he brought a strong voice to the Senate
and
floor.
He's been very consistent with it
from that day.
Anything that happens that's regarding that has anything regarding a shooting, he's on that floor. He's
he
bringing
had a 15-hour filibuster, I believe it was, yes, on the Senate mm-hmm. floor.
You know, and I hats off to states like New York, Connecticut, Oregon, Washington. These are states that have already passed one of the more stricter laws against gun owners, gun control, than any other state in the union. At this point, they're really at the forefront of the fight. There was also some news recently about states, a consortium of states coming together, New York, Massachusetts, Connecticut, in where they want to start their own thing. They figured if the federal government is not going to do it, we're going to do it.
Right, and we did the same thing with the Paris climate. Mm-hmm. You know, like we don't need Donald Trump on our side. We don't need the federal government. Of course, we would like their support, but we can start the movement.
And that's the good thing about...
In the end,
the one really great thing about the American political system is the states do have a lot more power. I mean, like, in many countries in the world, there is state systems, but the states don't really have any power. And that's the beauty. That is one of the beauties of American democracy, is that these states can band together and be like, nope, we're going to do what we feel is right for our area of the country. And hopefully that then sets national policy trend.
Right.
Enough states start to jump
right
on board.
You know, and then, you know, talking about these youngsters and how they weren't able to really verbalize their pain, then you jump forward to February 14th, Valentine's Day at, you know, Parkland, and that shooting happens, and these are teenagers, right? These are very young adults who have such a passion for what it was that they went through, and they're taking that passion and running with it. And I have not seen movement on anti-gun legislation pass so quickly as I've seen it with this group of people. They are really forcing change with their voices, and they're really holding these politicians accountable. When you think about Florida has not passed any major gun legislation, anti-gun legislation, in over 20 years, since like 1990s, and literally 2 weeks after it happened, mm-hmm. they've already upped the age for people to be able to buy guns immediately. And this is one of the most friendliest states towards the NRA.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I just think that what they're doing is amazing. I don't want to take too much time on the story. It is very important. I encourage these youngsters to go as far as they can, stay as vocal as long as they can, and not give up, because what you're doing is making a change. And you guys are amazing. You are magical in every sense of the word. I am proud. I watched these marches and I was crying because I thought it was just that powerful to see our youth not be complacent. And, you know, another thing that I need to point out is that a lot of people always say, oh, you know, the millennials or the generation that comes after the millennials, Generation Z or X, for example, baby boomers and Generation X, I believe is what they call me, treat these kids like, oh, you don't know what you're talking about. You're just a whole bunch of sissies, and you need to sort of kind of toughen up and blah, blah, blah. This ought to shut your mouth.
Yeah.
Big time.
It's the generations before that don't know what they're talking about,
right,
because they were the ones that are allowed these laws to pass, which allowed these crimes and atrocities to be committed.
Mm-hmm.
They're the ones that need to step up, admit their mistakes, and move forward to work with the future generations.
Absolutely. And I think it's one of the most important things that they can do is to stay vocal. And you know, I wanted to point out something that happened during the weekend. So Emma Gonzalez, right? She's this amazingly beautiful bisexual young lady who went on stage, and she read each one of those names of the 17 victims at the high school in Parkland, Florida. And basically, after going through the list of names, she basically just stops, right? And she goes silent, tears flowing down her face, just silent. And she's just staring into the crowd. And people are like, okay, well, what's going on? At one point, I saw one of the organizers literally come up to her and say, what are you doing? And suddenly you hear the timer go off. She had her iPhone. She had a timer. She had a timer for 6 minutes and I believe it was 20 seconds.
This 6:30?
6 minutes and 30 seconds. And that was the length of time that it took for the Parkland shooter at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School to gun down 17 people. And she decided that she was going to read all their names and then keep silent for that long, just to give you a perspective of what, how fast this
17
happens.
Lives are gone.
Mm-hmm. Gone. That's how fast it happened. And the reason why it happened that fast is because we are allowing people to have access to weapons that can kill people in that short of a time frame. And there's no need for that.
The most intense sign that protest sign that I saw from the march was this sign that had a bunch of bullet holes in it.
Mm-hmm.
And it the sign read something, I'm going to paraphrase, but it was something like, this is the bullet holes in this sign represent how many bullets were shot before you finished reading this
the sign.
And I was like, it was, I mean, it just was like visually so intense for me. And like, I could feel it in my gut. That's a reality. Nobody needs those kind of.
I'll give you one guess as to who it
Trish.
Is.
Trish.
Of course.
I could sense it. My blood pressure just went up.
My blood pressure just went up. Hi, Trish.
Hey, ladies.
Hello.
How are you guys?
We're doing well. We're having our little conversation on gun control and all the things that happened throughout the March for Our Lives over the current weekend.
And you just interrupted Patrick.
Yes.
It's fine.
Of course I did. That bitch ain't Trish.
Oh, she's fucking nasty.
I mean, I can make my voice go higher and act gayer if you need me to.
Bitch, you put on heels and a dress, okay? Don't start with me.
I have.
She only wishes this.
I have
did.
Proof that you do the same.
Uh-huh.
Shut your mouth, Chris.
I'm already on it.
So how
Tom's
are you?
Tom's got a pen in his hand. He's ready to go. Mm.
So how are you, my dear? How's Florida?
Oh, it's great.
That's it. Just
That's
great.
It?
Oh, I'm drunk at my grandma's. It's fine.
Okay. Well, that makes more sense.
I actually wasn't going to call in, but then everybody walked away from me. So.
All right, so
I'm going to have a talk with everybody then.
So since you are here and you're calling in and we're on the subject of March for Our Lives, do you care to give us your perspective on this weekend? She's got to sit down.
Not really.
Okay.
Not really.
Well, you have
you
a
know,
nice
like,
day,
I
honey.
Totally
it's been swell.
To win it, but not today.
Okay.
I love you guys. Have a good show.
All right. Thank you, boo-boo.
Is that it?
Bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
Yeah, that's it. Oh, Chris.
Yes.
Shut up.
Well, she got that in. That's
just
great,
read the least. Last one.
Well, it was nice for her to call in. We would have liked a little of her input, but you know, she's out in Florida. She's drinking with grandma. And like I said, everyone left her. So we're going to have a talk with everyone that left her because they allowed her to use a cell phone.
All right. Bye, Trish.
Bye.
We love you. We'll see you. I won't see you next Monday. We'll talk about that at the end of the show. All right, listen. So we told you we have a jam-packed show. There's so much to talk to. We haven't even gotten to the other two stories that we need to talk about on today's show. But I know that we have a special guest who's also going to join us to talk about another very important story. And we're going to do that when we come back from the break. So right now we're going to play some music. And when we return, Patrick is going to cover a little bit of a story. And then we're going to have our special guest, our other special guest, join us via Skype. So here we go. We'll be right back.
To pull you up above the earth, well, I will lift you up to show you just how much you're worth. 'Cause we need to be loved. So we need to. You
All right, welcome back from the break, y'all. That was Anthony Starbull, the amazing Anthony Starbull with We Need to Be Loved. I absolutely love that song. It is such, it's full of such hope. You know what I'm saying? Do you dig me?
I dig you.
He's just amazing. Amazing, talented young man. Anyway, welcome back from the show. As we said before, we've got a jam-packed show. We've got so much to talk about. And one of the things that we're going to talk about now is something that's happening in our very own backyard, right here in the state of Connecticut. And Patrick, who joined us today to co-host the show, is going to talk a little bit about what we're going to talk about next. And then we also have that special guest who's going to chime in and tell us all about what's going on and how we can help. So, Patrick, why don't you kick it off for us?
Yeah, so we're talking about a super hyper local issue. So for all of the listeners that are all over the world, this is, I'll give you a little background. So essentially, in the state of Connecticut, in our judiciary system, our governor, Daniel Malloy, recently elected, or not elected, rather, nominated a longtime advisor, legal advisor of him, Justice Andrew McDonald, to become the Chief Justice of the state of Connecticut's Supreme Court, which would be fabulous for a variety of reasons, particularly because of his long track record of perspectives, legal perspectives that seem to be in line with a lot of Connecticut's longstanding traditions and perspectives. But it would also make him kind of the other side of things. It would also make him the first openly gay chief justice of any court in the United States, which would be obviously a huge step from a civil rights perspective.
Absolutely.
I've been preliminarily involved in some of the advocacy work that's been done around this, but when you and I were talking about whether or not we should talk about it on today's show, since the official vote whether or not he will be appointed is tomorrow.
It happens tomorrow.
I immediately said, well, we have to have my partner in crime, Anthony from the Triangle Community Center, on, because he's really the one, along with a lot of our other important queer LGBTQ leaders around the state, including individuals like Anne Steinbach, who was the kind of person behind Love Makes a Family in the state of Connecticut, which passed marriage equality, and many of the other great political advocates in the state that are LGBTQ, leading a conversation around why Justice McDonald would be a great choice. And so I text messaged and called and left, you know, tweets and other things for Anthony to join us. And he is here via Skype.
So, Anthony, thank you so much for joining us on short notice. We had some breaking news today regarding the issue, and I would like to invite you to talk a little bit about what's going on and how we can help here locally in the state of Connecticut.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for having me on this show tonight to talk about this issue. I think it's incredibly important, not just for the state of Connecticut right now, but really the country as a whole, just because of some of the ways this is playing out. Just to summarize what Patrick said, so Andrew McDonald is a lawyer, began his career as a lawyer probably about two decades ago, and has since led a long life of public service, serving in every area of government in Connecticut. He started on the city council in Stamford. He became a state senator, served in the legislature for many years, became the governor's legal counsel for several years before being appointed a Supreme Court justice, which he's been for 5 years now. So in 2012, I believe, or 2013, when he was appointed as a Supreme Court justice, he had overwhelming bipartisan support in both the House and the Senate for his appointment to the state Supreme Court. And what's going on now is that Governor Malloy, in his final year as governor, has nominated Andrew to be the Chief Justice of the state Supreme Court, which is basically the head of the judicial branch of government in Connecticut. It's a really important position. No openly LGBTQ person has ever held the position in our country's history. So it's a pretty big deal. But the nomination has to be approved by the state House and the state Senate. And so that has not been going so well. And unfortunately, you know, it seems that even before the initial hearing about Andrew's appointment, there was a group of Republicans that came out in opposition to him, we've seen a lot of rhetoric from the Family Institute of Connecticut, which is Connecticut's resident anti-LGBTQ group that has lobbied against every LGBTQ equality measure in our state, including lobbied for the continuation of conversion therapy, lobbied for the continuation of discrimination against transgender people, lobbied against marriage equality, lobbied against non-discrimination for gay and lesbian people. So the Family Institute, extremely homophobic, extremely anti-LGBTQ, they were one of the first groups to come out and say against Andrew and say he could not be appointed. But unfortunately, you know, so we're kind of in the final process. Andrew's gone through the judicial committee. There were, that was a tied vote, 20-20, which was not great as far as we see it. The vote then went to the House of Representatives in the State House. And while we expected that to pass with a much larger margin, seeing that that's controlled by the Democrats by about 8 votes, it only passed by 1 vote. Wow. Meaning that a number of Democrats voted against Andrew's confirmation as well. Not surprisingly, some of the same Democrats that we know are actually anti-LGBTQ themselves for various reasons. And so now we're in a situation where a lot of people think of Connecticut as a really blue progressive state, but actually our state Senate is 18-18 Republican-Democrat. Not that that should matter, right, in an issue like this. But one of the Democrats very early on in the process recused themselves from the vote, knowing exactly what they were doing at the time, because they have personal issues with Andrew, and made it an 18-17 vote, obviously in the Republicans' favor. So what we've been doing for the last 3 weeks in anticipation of this vote is encouraging every constituent we can in Fairfield County and Greater Connecticut to contact their senators and tell them that we know Andrew's an eminently qualified candidate for this position, and their vote should really have no other consideration other than the fact he's qualified, he's been nominated. Why wouldn't he be approved for the position unless there's other concerns going on?
Can I interject very quickly? I can't help but to compare or to see the comparison here. We have a governor that is in his last year. He's not running for re-election. You have a Republican Party who's opposing the nomination of an openly gay LGBTQ member of our community. And they're basically just stalling his nomination at this point. It just very oddly similar to what they did to Merrick Garland in our national level politics, in where they did not even give him, at least Andrew got a hearing. Right. When you think of Merrick Garland, he didn't even get a hearing to be able to be considered to become a justice in our Supreme Court of the United States. So what I want to know, you mentioned very briefly that there are several Democrats within our state that are against the LGBT community. Is this something that is public knowledge? Can we name these people on the show? Is this something that we can or cannot do?
I mean, I can name one of them.
Oh, please drop some names, because you know what?
We want people to be held responsible for their votes.
This is important for us because, you know, as you know, and as Patrick knows, that visibility is everything in our community. And to know who stands with us is important, because then we know what we need to do as a community.
Or even more, who stands against us.
Exactly. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, one of those Democrats, you know, I think, I'm not saying every Democrat who voted against him was voted against him for homophobic reasons, but I will say that there is one particular Democrat who's actually from my hometown of Norwalk. His name is Bruce Morris. Mm-hmm. He's a Pentecostal pastor, and he has come out vehemently against LGBTQ rights on several occasions when given the opportunity to do so. In fact, in the conversion therapy ban last year, he was conveniently not in Hartford that day that the vote took place, so we didn't get him on the record for that vote, but he actually spoke very passionately against marriage equality when that passed in 2007.
And that's sad, because, you know, regardless of what your religious creed is, you know, whether you're Pentecostal, Catholic, Baptist, doesn't matter. You are serving the public. You're in a public office position that requires that you hear your constituents and be able to, you know, speak for your constituency. And taking such a stance like that regarding anyone in the LGBT community is really a disservice to the position that you're currently in. So what have other Democrats come out and sort of kind of said to this person, you know, you're on the wrong side of history here. You know, what you're doing is not right, regardless of what your religious beliefs are.
Oh, absolutely. There's been very, very, very strong activism from elected officials, but also community leaders around this issue. Not because we are trying to treat this like an elected position that we're campaigning for, but because it's been so obvious from the beginning, the opposition that's been organized against Andrew McDonald's nomination. And just responding to them, letting our elected officials know that this is an important issue for us. We're paying attention, and we expect them to listen to constituents. One of the most upsetting things that happened today is that after we know all of these Republican senators and all of our senators in the state Senate right now, period, have received hundreds of emails and phone calls about this issue, urging them to take politics out of it and just confirm Andrew based on his qualifications. The Senate Republican leader today, Len Fasano, made an announcement.
He's from Milford, I think.
Mm-hmm. Right. He's actually from your area near New Haven. He actually made an announcement that regardless of whatever more contacts they get or any constituents who have already contacted their senators, every Republican senator in the Senate will vote along party lines against Andrew McDonald. So they actually made that announcement today at about 3 p.m. And so they're basically saying that they don't care how many of their constituents call them and ask them to do otherwise, call them and ask them to just vote a vote of conscience that they believe is fair based on his resume and his experience. They're saying at this point that they've all taken this pact where they're going to vote the way their party tells them to, even in a progressive state like Connecticut.
Well, now, like Tommy had mentioned, this obviously sounds so similar to when President Obama was on his way out and he was, you know, nominated Merrick Garland for Supreme Court. It sounds if you put the idea of him, of this justice being openly gay aside, do you feel that this has anything to do with a lame duck nominating this justice for the fact that, you know, he's on his way out and that's what the Republicans are saying? We need to wait for the next president to put a justice in office. Do you think that this has anything to do with the fact that Malloy is on his way out and they should wait for the next governor to appoint someone or nominate someone?
Well, something else happened over the weekend, which is that Malloy, you know, because he's obviously pushing hard for his nomination,
right,
he actually reached out to the Senate Republicans and said, hey, I'll make you a deal. You confirm Andrew and I will appoint one of the people I know that you favor to be the next justice on the Supreme Court to take his place. And Len Fasano's response to him was, well, that's not much of an offer because we know there's a good chance we'll have a Republican governor next year. He will just appoint him anyway.
So basically, they're playing partisan politics.
Absolutely. They are. They're not actually caring about the will of the people or what's good for the state. It's just about party lines and nothing else.
So he, just very quickly, I just want to throw out there, if you're listening live on Digital Stream Radio and you want to be able to make some phone calls, you can do so. Again, the vote happens tomorrow and things need to happen quickly. So we've got Senator Summers, who covers Sterling, Plainfield, Voluntown, North Stonington, Griswold, Groton, Preston. That phone number is 860-240-0528. Senator Formica, she, I would assume, is a she or he. We'll just say this. Hey. Senator, Basra, Eastlime, New London, Old Saybrook, Old Lyme, Salem, Waterford, Montville. If you're in any of those areas, you can call 860-240-8371. Senator Kelly covers Monroe, Seymour, Stratford, Shelton. You can call 8826 for that senator. Senator Butcher it. Go for it. Give them a call. They cover Ridgefield, Reading, Monroe, Weston, Bethel, Wilton, Westport, New Canaan, 860-240-0591. Senator Huang?
Yeah, Senator
Huang.
Huang. Okay. It sounds like Juan in Spanish, but we're not going to go there.
Focus.
Focus. Easton, Fairfield, Weston, Westport, Newtown. Those are the towns that he or she covers. Don't know who they are. 860-240-8805. Senator Linares. That's a Spanish name. I know that. That senator covers Chester, Clinton, Colchester, Deep River, East Haddam, East Hampton, Essex, Haddam, Lyme, Old Saybrook, Portland, and Westbrook. If you want to give that senator a call, that's 860-240-0529. There's also Senator Fasano. I can't read. Jesus Christ, Twitter. Come on. Fasano covers Durham, East Haven, North Haven, Wallingford. That's close to your area, Christopher.
That's my area.
860-240-8871. I'm trying to read through some fine print here. Let me open this up again. And Senator France, 860-240, oh God, let's see, 0474. That senator covers New Canaan, Stamford, and Greenwich. Give these people a call. Let them know what you are feeling. Let them know that, you know, they should, if that's how you feel, that they should go through with the nomination of this Supreme Court justice for the state of Connecticut, because it is important. You got to understand that, you know, we're trying to get someone into the court system who's already in the court system, but we're trying to get someone elevated that has a very, very good track record. And it doesn't have to be about someone being LGBTQ. I mean, for us here on the show, that's absolutely important because, you know, again, visibility just opens up doors for many of us in all the communities across the U.S. But, you know, this is important, you know, get involved with your political process.
Yeah.
And I mean, your judicial process.
Well, and I was going to say, I feel like one of the things that's really important to say about this entire experience is it's not about having the next openly gay person hold a position they've never had before. It's about we as a country have gotten so hung up on party lines that the parties have actually lost the essence of what the party is. The difference between Republican and Democrat is one likes big government and the other likes small government. And the problem that we have equated these different parties to is that Republicans have been equated to conservatism and Democrats have been equated to liberalism, which actually has nothing to do with the root of the parties. And for a Republican to come out and demand, you know, a ban on gay marriage in the United States, or, you know, that's big government, which is against the principles of what republicanism as a political movement is. And that's something that I think, you know, with some of these different issues that have come up over the past, I'm going to say last 5 to 10 years in our political system, is it has become, and this is on both sides. This is not a Republican hating moment. This is a both parties have the same issue.
It's a government hating moment.
We have this huge issue of these politicians that vote in this very like block manner and don't actually care what their constituents are saying. Don't actually care that there is such a thing as gray area in political debate. It's all about black and white. Are you Republican or are you a Democrat? Are you the good guy or are you the bad guy? Like that's what our political system has come down to, which is terrible.
But a lot of that has to do with the fact that they're blindly following leaders who promote that type of attitude in politics.
Correct.
You know, when you think about in national politics, Pelosi, and you have Ryan, and then you have, you know, Chuck Schumer, and then you have Frog Face. What's his name?
McConnell.
Thank you. You know, it's there. I know him as Frogface. You know, these people set an agenda and then they expect their party to abide by it. And then they really chastise and punish them and say, you know, you don't go by what by our agenda. We're going to find a way to get you out and get someone in there that will
boot you out.
Same thing happens in state legislatures and state senates. You know, you have leaders who have an agenda and their agenda is the law of the land. And if you go against that, you're going against the grain and you're really, really putting yourself up for a big fight. And that's a sad part because, you know, you need someone, you need to elect people or some that have a backbone and have a spine to actually look at a leader and say, you're wrong and I'm not doing this. I'm not going to stand for this.
Either party.
It doesn't matter whether you're a Republican or a Democrat. That's what's happening because they're holding each of their, like, their flock to the fire.
Well, that happened. I mean, if you look at all the Republicans who were speaking out during the this past election, speaking out against Donald Trump, and the second he was elected, they were like, I am so looking forward to sucking your tits and working with you, and we're going to get things done. Right. Like,
exactly. And all of a sudden, they were all in line.
Falling in line. Exactly.
Right. Falling in line to follow the rhetoric that they'd, a lot of them, fought against forever. All of a sudden, they were okay with rapists and drug pushers and no trans people in the military. And I mean, it's like, it's ridiculous.
When you think about it, you had a lot of the people that ran against Donald Trump are either associated in some way, shape, or form with his campaign.
Which is kind of normal.
I mean, Ben Carson.
Yeah, he's, but that's normal.
It just kills me because, you know, these people literally destroyed this man when it came to words, the war of words, as I call it. But it was just insane to me. But anyway, that's backstory. Back to Anthony, who joined us to talk about this. So what happens next? What is the expectation as it stands tomorrow?
Well, the expectation at this point, like I said, is that unfortunately it is going to be a partisan vote. I would encourage everyone to reach out to your senators regardless, because they need to hear from their constituents and we need to get them on the record. But I'll tell you, the most concerning thing about this to me is that the Republicans in our state are unfortunately taking a stance that they know is they have no good reason. They have no justification to support their stance. And they know the historical importance of this vote as well. And they know how important it is to the LGBTQ community. And they are voting against it regardless. And I tell you right now to heed these words, that this is a test of the LGBT community in Connecticut and possibly the country as a whole. Because if they get away with this and they're reelected in the fall and face no consequences, we will be looking at a right to discriminate bill in Connecticut next year. Absolutely. Especially if there's a Republican governor. And if they can do that in Connecticut, just, we already know about some of the horrible things going on in other parts of our country. But if they can do that in Connecticut, it will just energize the real homophobes and the real bigots in our country, unfortunately, even further to try and roll back LGBT rights.
Which is definitely one of the scariest things or scenarios that can play out in our politics, because, you know, we've gained so much over the course of the last 10 years. I mean, we've leaped forward when it comes to rights for the LGBTQ community. So definitely, it's very disturbing and something that we really, really need to be watching and ensuring that we are fighting for.
And we mentioned on the show that the momentum has to keep going. With a lot of people, once marriage equality passed, they felt that we were dealt this, or we earned this amazing victory, but it doesn't stop there. The momentum needs to keep moving, especially when this is hitting in our own backyard, like you were saying, here in Connecticut. This can be a very blue state, and supposedly very progressive, but this can be groundbreaking for the future of the United States as a whole.
Well, and we like to think of ourselves as a super progressive state, but I mean, there's so many. I mean, our percentage of homeless youth in the state, I've said this before on the show, and I'm just going to keep repeating myself because I don't care, because it's an important statistic to repeat. In the state of Connecticut, we have more homeless queer youth than the national average. And that's because there are conservative parts of our state where it is okay to kick your child out and put them on the street. Literally, 4 days ago, 18-year-old, still in high school, got kicked out of his house in Milford by his grandmother.
And that's a shame.
Called me at the center because he was looking for resources and didn't know what to do. I mean, literally, this, you know, we like to think of ourselves as in a safe state where, you know, we have all these protections, because we do have a lot of legal protections in the state of Connecticut. We have a lot of really big wins, like the ban on conversion therapy was a huge win.
Absolutely.
In the state of Connecticut. But there are extremely conservative people in the state of Connecticut. There is extremely wealthy conservative people in the state of Connecticut that can influence things that affect all of us on a daily level. And that's a reality.
And since you mentioned it, you mentioned this youngster reaching out, well, not youngster, but 18-year-old reaching out to you at the center. Can you remind people what the phone number at the center is in case they do need to be able to reach out and say, hey, listen, I need help. What are my options? You know, what can you as a center direct me to? What resources are available in the state of Connecticut? You know, let them know.
Yeah. So first and foremost, I would say go to our website, newhavenpridecenter.org, because we actually do have a fabulous resources page that includes a variety of different resources that are both local and national, including national hotlines for the Trans Lifeline, the Suicide Prevention Hotline. Anthony's website, ctpridecenter.org, also has an incredible resources page that has all kinds of different resources, again, both local and national. And Triangle Community Center and the New Haven Pride Center are the only two current LGBTQ centers, community centers in the state of Connecticut, unfortunately. There are tremendous other resources, places like the Hartford Gay and Lesbian Health Collective, True Colors, outct.org, all of these organizations that have fabulous resources as well. The New Haven Pride Center's phone number is 203-387-2252. If you call that number, you will either get the voicemail or me on the other line, because those are your only two options. But yeah, I would definitely encourage you. I mean, even if you're not in Connecticut and you're looking for resources, between Anthony and the Triangle Community Center's website and the New Haven Pride Center's website, you can get access to a lot of resources. I know that, you know, I don't want to speak for Anthony's site, but on the New Haven Pride Center site, we have listed every major LGBTQ organization on our resource page. We list most of the AIDS projects that are around the state of Connecticut, and healthcare organizations that are around the state of Connecticut that are there for a variety of different services. So yeah.
So Anthony, we do have other stories that we obviously need to get to and cover, but before we let you go, can you plug the phone number for the Triangle Community Center so that if anyone has any need to call, they can do so?
Yeah, I would be so happy to. Thank you so much. And I will just say that so Triangle Community Center is New Haven Pride Center 5 years in the future, because I got a 5-year head start on Patrick. And we do have a team of social workers now and a case management program. So if any youth or young adults especially are experiencing homelessness, they can actually come into our center and meet with one of our social workers. And that's one of the primary things we do, is we help them find housing and the resources they need to survive. So if any such youth or young adult or anyone in our community is in such a need, they can absolutely reach out to us, 203-853-0600. That's 203-853-0600, or visit us at ctpridecenter.org.
That's amazing. So, Anthony, thank you so much for joining us and giving us some insight on what's going on with the nomination for Andrew McDonald. I think it is important, again, reach out to your senators. That vote happens tomorrow. We look forward to collaborating with you in the future as well. So thank you for joining us, and you have a fantastic night.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Bye, girl.
All right. So that was Anthony Crissy again from the Triangle Community Center. He joined us to talk about a little bit of what's going on in the community regarding the appointment of Chief Justice Andrew McDonald to the Supreme Court of the state of Connecticut. We've got other stories that we're going to cover and jump into. Christopher, you had a story that you wanted to talk about before we went on break, so I'm going to throw the mic over to you so that you can go ahead and cover your story.
Well, it's actually perfect that we waited for this, because it has to do with another Supreme Court in the United States. It has to go all the way down to Louisiana.
Oh, Lord have mercy.
Yes. Their Supreme Court ordered...
He's gone.
Kills an order that was protecting LGBT state employees. Now, Louisiana has a Democratic governor who tried to protect state employees from anti-LGBT discrimination, but the attorney general and the high court had other plans, and the vote was knocked down, decided this week by a 4-3 ruling to not take the case, upholding the lower court's conclusion. Back in 2016, the Democratic Governor Bel Edwards issued an executive order that banned anti-LGBT discrimination among state employees and contractors, but the homophobe Landry instantly took action, suing to stop the order. A lower court order ruled for Landry, saying that the governor overstepped his authority in issuing the directive. So it's just interesting that while we're having these issues here in our Supreme Court, an issue in the South with a Democratic leader trying to protect LGBT peoples, especially, you know, working for the federal government, was just knocked down just like that in a 4-3 vote.
Well, I do have to say, too, that the Democratic governor in the state of Louisiana was just recently elected, mm-hmm. not too long ago. And before that, it was a Republican governor who had some issues and had to resign as a result of the issues that he had. I can't really remember exactly what it was. But so this is a very, very red state. It's a very, very deep southern state.
It's always been that way.
And it's always mm-hmm. been that way. So I can see why someone like this governor would have
Bell Edwards
a very, very hard time trying to get anything pushed through such a red state when it comes to the LGBTQ community.
And if you go on The Advocate and you see this article by Neil Broverman, you can see the face of disgust on this governor as this was knocked down. And the quote that they have for the governor is absolutely beautiful. Bell Edwards expressed disappointment, saying in a statement, quote, "I, for one, do not think discrimination of any kind has a place in our society, much less the workplace. Unfortunately, this puts us on the wrong side of history," end quote. Us is important because that puts the group, the state of Louisiana, together as one who knocked down these protections for human rights.
And, you know, hopefully we'll get something through the federal system that will sort of kind of counteract that.
Don't
I'm pretty sure that their lawsuits are going to be filed. It happens. I know that the ACLU has been very big on submitting lawsuits. I wouldn't doubt if the HRC is going to move in on that and try to file a lawsuit. But, you know, one will only see and see how far they can take it. Maybe it gets up to the Supreme Court and maybe we'll get a favorable ruling.
And they also think it's going to go further because those who were siding with the governor not only sympathized for LGBT state employees, but they also saw the potential case of clarifying the legality of executive orders when a governor and attorney general have opposing views. So this is going to go even further than just LGBT rights. It's right. going to go much further than that.
You know, and things like this, exposing the truth behind a lot of these elected officials and how they handle, you know, the rights of other people in our own country is really, really, really crazy. And to think that, you know, we have now our community is more than ever starting to really come out of its shell and say, hey, this is who I am. This is what I'm all about. This is what I have. This, they're starting to get comfortable in their skin to the point where they can actually come out and say, I'm gay or I'm bisexual or I'm transgender or I'm HIV positive. Or, you know, we're starting to bring a lot of issues that surround our community and being very vocal about it. And speaking of that, Patrick, you had a story that you wanted to cover regarding someone who did something recently that was amazing. So, why don't we talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. So, many of you may have heard about this. It was like semi-international news just because this happened, even though this is about an American news anchor. He was actually in Australia at the time that he made this announcement. But ABC reporter Carl Schmid came out as HIV positive over the weekend in an emotional Facebook post where he talked about everything from stigma, stigma experienced by individuals who are HIV positive, to the kind of feeling that he felt to hide his true self in the closet. I'm trying to find in the article, there's this great quote that he had. Okay, here it is. Okay. I'm on the side of the camera where, for better or worse, it's considered taboo for people like me to be like me. And I thought that was a really powerful component of his kind of quote unquote coming out with his status. You know, I think stigma, and particularly stigma around HIV, is still a very huge issue in the LGBTQ community. It's definitely a huge issue beyond the LGBTQ community. We still live in a country where it's illegal for gay men to donate blood because, you know, all of us have HIV. We still live in a world where the term I'm clean is prominently used by LGBTQ people, particularly gay men, to identify themselves as not being HIV positive, which, you know, the term clean is so horrifically problematic because you're essentially saying that, oh, somebody who's HIV positive or somebody who has any
disease period
is dirty, which is completely ridiculous. And so for me, I thought this was, you know, well, you know.
I don't mean to interrupt you, but Trish is like blowing up our cell phone right now. He's like, preach, fucking preach, Patrick, fucking preach. Go ahead.
No, but like, so, you know, I had this great realization about my life not too long ago. I have multiple friends that are HIV positive. Mm-hmm. I have multiple friends that have been positive for short term, long term, and extreme long term. I have friends that disclose their status to me that have had sex a bazillion times, and friends that have disclosed that they are HIV positive that has had sex once or twice. And the reality that we as a community can discriminate in a way that a disease cannot. The reality is that HIV and all other diseases, not just sexually transmitted disease, every disease, the flu, the bubonic plague, like whatever the disease is, a common cold, has no discrimination.
Against anyone.
It can infect and kill anyone in our world, regardless of race, economic status, what you believe in. It doesn't matter who you're sleeping with. And here we are as a community that has so much stacked up against us. Mm-hmm. We are a community. You know, this is one of the things that I say all the time, being in my position at the Pride Center as executive director. The LGBTQ plus community is the most diverse community minority group in the world, mm-hmm, because we have a little bit of everyone, exactly, which in my opinion makes us the best community, makes us the best minority group because we have a little bit of every single person. But that means that we also have all the challenges of normal society. We have racism, we have misogyny, we have every single issue that exists in society stacked up against us. And then we're on top of that going to make what would be classified as a minority within our minority? Because at the end of the day, the people who are HIV positive is such a small percentage of the LGBTQ community. Because guess what? So many people died.
Mm-hmm. During that first wave in the 80s and early
and second
90s.
And third wave. Yeah. I mean, yeah, like,
it wasn't until we got, you know, really good medication that people were able to actually live healthy,
and there are some incredibly lucky people, mm-hmm, or maybe unlucky people that have been positive for 20 plus years, 30 plus years. There's a person in New Haven that's been positive for 30 plus years and watched everyone around him die.
And he had to sit through all that. Would you consider yourself lucky of all these?
Right. The survivor. And so for us to be stigmatizing people that you have no idea what resulted in them becoming positive. Why are you stigmatizing them? Why are you making them feel guilty? I mean, it just makes me so upset because it's that stigma that ultimately continues to kill our youth, mm-hmm, that ultimately continues to spread the virus, because the stigma of being HIV positive makes people not get tested. It makes people do drugs to deal with their status. It makes people drink to deal with their status. It makes people hide their status, which makes everyone else unsafe, including themselves, because they're putting themselves at risk because they're having potentially unprotected sex or not unprotected sex with someone that they don't know what their other person's status, mm-hmm, is either, because they're not going to bring it up because they don't want to talk about it. But then they're not having that conversation with the other person. The other person could have something that's going to make them even sicker. Because at the end of the day, their immune system is compromised. Even, you know, it makes me so upset that the kind of self-hatred that exists and the self-stigmatization that happens in our community Like literally there, we are 4 to 7% of the world population, guys. There's not that many of us to begin with. There's so many things that we deal with in our community. I mean, this is, I've been writing a grant for 3 days, so excuse me for beginning on a high horse.
It's called a soapbox when you're in that chair.
Yeah. I'm on Trisha's soapbox right now, but like literally I've been writing a grant for 4 days. And one of the things that I wrote into the grant is there was this realization I had the other day, about what makes us as a minority group different than all the other minority groups. And the one thing that really separates us is that, with the exception for a very, very small percentage, all of us on the LGBTQ plus spectrum were born into parents that were not like us. Mm-hmm. Every other minority has their parents, their siblings, and their family that looks, believes, acts,
and identifies,
likes them. The LGBTQ youth that are born into families that are heterosexual, they could be the most understanding, welcoming families in the world. They still don't understand the essence of what it means to be LGBTQ.
There's still that difference.
There's still a difference. And that's right there. You're setting up the way the system works. We're setting up our youth already at a disadvantage. You could have the best parents in the world and you can still be end up being at a disadvantage. And then you add on top of that racism, and you add on top of that sexism and misogyny and all of the other isms and isks and ologies that you can possibly think of that our community faces every single day. It's just, it boggles my mind why we self add on more hatred that doesn't need to even be there.
You know, one conversation that we've had on the show, thanks to Patrick as well, who introduced us to this artist, was Alok. Alok spoke so amazingly to how it is that we segregate ourselves, and how as a community we have to come together. And if you've never checked they out, do it. We had a transgender spotlight for the entire month of November. You can go back on our website, check out Alok's episode. You will be blown away with what this amazing individual had to say.
It was the only time I think all three of you were completely silent. Yeah.
It really was. It's like we had nothing, absolutely nothing to say. So, you know, it's a beautiful thing to see people coming out. I applaud this young man for doing so. It is a scary thing to do in today's world, regardless if we've come farther than we were 15, 20 years ago, you know, and you mentioned something earlier about people who have a lot of sex that are HIV positive and people who've had sex once or twice and end up being HIV positive.
It only takes once.
We had another guest, Kyle Rodriguez, who joined us on the show and talked about his life story and talked about him just once. He was very young, and all of a sudden, boom, it's like, you know, I am. And what he has done with his life and completely taken that incredibly crazy situation and just literally blossomed into one of the most amazing people that we have in our community here locally that helps so many people. And
he's my little baby bear.
He took that his struggle and he ran with it, and he has created such an amazing culture around HIV here in New Haven.
Well, and I think it's really important. I'm gonna put my teacher hat on for 1 second, and I just wanna say, for anybody who's listening to this, that if somebody tells you that they are undetectable, that means that they are unable to transmit the disease, mm-hmm. and that's a really important piece of information. The CDC, I forget exactly when they did this, but it was sometime in the last 5 months, officially stated that if you are undetectable, you are unable to transmit the disease, aka that person is just as clean, quote unquote, mm-hmm. as you are. And I think it's really important to say that out loud, because there's a lot of misinformation and there's a lot of confusion around the disease of HIV and AIDS, and it's perpetuated by the heteronormative kind of dialogue that happens around sex education and HIV in particular. And so I just want to take a second to put my educator hat on and say that.
Well, and we
thank you.
We certainly appreciate it. Thank you. All right. So, you know, again, there are many resources out there. Make sure that, you know, I hope that you guys are aware of Truvada. PrEP. It is an important medication, an amazing medication that's helping our community really, you know, come up on the other side of this fight and keeping you healthy and keeping you HIV free. But then again, as Patrick said, you know, it is important to understand that, you know what, there's no one is dirty.
No one's dirty.
No one's dirty. You know, you just happen to sort of kind of have a virus or a disease that anyone else can get, and that doesn't discriminate, and that's worth repeating.
Yeah, I mean,
Stop the stigma.
One of the things that, so at the New Haven Pride Center right now, we have this fabulous exhibit called Facing the Virus, which is actually, I'm sorry, I'm going to do a commercial for a second, that is actually all the, it's a 40-piece collection. We have, I think, 14 of them on display. And each painting represents a different experience with HIV. So just to say, again, to say it out loud, that's 40 different experiences of how someone can become HIV positive from a variety of different ways. You know, one of the things that Kyle, who's a very good friend of mine, like I said, he's my baby bear to me being the mama bear. He recently went on a trip overseas to experience children in so many parts of the world that are born HIV positive because of bureaucracy where medication is not made available to HIV positive mothers that would literally save these children. And I mean, this is not even like a small, like 5% of the world where it's really poor. No, it's like literally all over the world. This is a problem. And our artist, Jonathan Joseph Gungeon, actually talked about this in one of his paintings, which was inspired by his trip to India. So,
Nick, I need to tell you something. We're talking. Stop texting.
Thank you. We got this,
baby girl. We got this. I know that you're proud of Patrick.
For standing on the Trish soapbox.
Yeah, he's like, oh, I'm so proud of it. I put that bitch on silent. I'm so proud of Patrick. Not only did he bring himself, but he filled my shoes so well. He's preaching visibility and education. I love you all so much. We love you too.
Love you
the feeling's not mutual.
Enjoy your freaking vacation. Enjoy your family. Good night. Don't worry about it, girl. We got this. We love you. You're going to have control of the show next week when I'm gone. We'll get there. So listen, guys, we have to quickly plug one of our sponsors, and we'll be right back. Tonight's episode is brought to you by Innovative Heating and Cooling LLC, a Connecticut-based business servicing the greater New England tri-state area. From maintenance and repairs to replacements, conversions, and even new installs, Innovative Heating and Cooling provides professional top-quality work for both commercial and residential customers. Call our friends Garrett and Kyle today and schedule your free in-home estimate by calling 203-283-7272. You can follow them on Facebook at Innovative Heating and Cooling. Now back to the show. All right. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. That was our plug for Innovative Heating and Cooling. Fantastic people. Great guys. Check them out. I want to jump ship and just go somewhere else. So we have a new fan, right? She is a mother of an LGBTQ child, and she constantly reaches out to the show, and she talks about how she's really happy that we, you know, she found us, and through our show, she has learned so much on how to be able to cope with understanding her child much better. So big up to Kim. Thank you so much for being a fan of the show and for listening week after week. And thank you for reaching out to us and letting us know little tidbits of information that are very important of things that we've talked about. So that being said, last week we were talking about the famous bunny right now, right? Marlon Bundo,
yes.
What is his name? Botus?
Botus. Yes.
Bunny
of the United States, yeah.
Which is amazing. And so Nick had talked about the efforts from...
John Oliver,
thank you, who wrote, in conjunction with other people, wrote his own version of Marlon Bundo and the book. And so Kim, she sent us an email. She goes like, hey guys, it's Kim. Definitely not Waffle House Kim.
I love that.
I already ordered the Marlon Bundo book. That ratings for the Marlon Bundo book at this point are 2,519 five-star ratings, while Vice President's Bunny book only has 56 five stars. and one half. We are already, we are ahead with this wonderful book about acceptance by a long shot, which is amazing. So I'm going to give claps for Marlon Bundo.
I like him because he has a bow tie.
Exactly. And you always wear bow ties. I'm surprised you're not wearing one today.
I wanted to wear a turtleneck today.
Speaking of animals and stuff, I do have to say this, Trish. Although we love you and we miss you in your chair, we have literally replaced Captain Moose Knuckle.
Oh my God. I did not think that was coming.
So I had to talk about this. So we were outside.
Oh my God.
And we were having a cigarette during the break. And I looked down and I'm like, all right, Patrick, not that I'm looking at you that way or anything, but you've got some serious camel toe going on right now. And it was like massive. And of course, Chris comes out. I was like, wait, isn't that like a moose knuckle? Isn't that what they call the male version of a camel toe? I thought that was hysterical, but I had to throw that out there. Yeah, he's running
so
around.
So much for keeping things nice.
No, I'm sorry, but I had to.
Like that know. Brain on Patrick, yeah. Very intuitive, but that moose knuckle.
Patrick is so red right now. It's incredible. Yeah, but yeah, we've got a new Captain Moose Knuckle.
That's fine. Yes, Trish, I do have a cartoon. And it has a Canadian belt buckle.
No, but you know what? I needed to make you laugh and make everybody laugh because, of course, it was funny to me.
I mean, considering I've been on 4 episodes of Gay Talk and I've literally like just made fun of everybody else the entire time. It was only fitting.
Welcome, especially when you're sitting in that chair. Bullets always fly that way.
I was like, what's going on there? It's like mountains. It's like, wow. It's like, Patrick, I'm going to start going,
grinder,
beep,
my grinder's going to be so
beep.
Much better later
oh,
now.
Oh, Lord have mercy. So, Kim, anyway, thank you. Thank you, our new Captain Moose Knuckle. Thank you, Kim, for reaching out and giving us all the information that we absolutely love. Chris, you're nasty. That's what Trish is saying. She is still texting. I can't. Anyway.
Go away.
So we've got a couple of more stories. Let's jump into those, and then we need to close the show. Christopher,
I'm not bringing this one up. This one's going to be a long time.
Okay, so we have no more stories? No?
Day in history?
We have all those things.
Yeah, it's a lazy vodka kind of day. All right, so then let's jump into our Gay Talk term.
Oh, that's me.
That is you.
That is you. So because Patrick is our guest today, and Trish is not in-house, we let Patrick pick the Gay Talk term for today's episode. So why don't you tell us what the Gay Talk term is and then help us out by using it in a sentence.
So this fabulous book is very exciting, and I had a lot of fun looking through it before, but then I had to pick something that started with a P since my name is Patrick. So I picked Paint or Painted, which refers to facial cosmetics. And the sentence recommended by the book that you use it in is, God, but your nose is so shiny. What do you use for paint? Furniture polish?
And it was perfect because it's like what Trish usually, we see with Trish. It's like
we smack her with furniture polish. Yeah. Every time.
Exactly.
But it's only fitting too because, you know, you have an alter ego.
I
Kiki
do.
Lucia. Mm-hmm. Why don't you tell us a little bit about Kiki and why you do Kiki?
So Kiki, for those of you who have not listened to the fabulous episode that Kiki was on with me, Easy Lay, and Summer Orlando to talk about Hocus Pocus Live. Uh-huh. Kiki Lucia is my drag alter ego who just turned another year older, like 4 days ago.
Proud of you. Happy birthday.
Thank you. And she is this ridiculous, over-the-top, and I recently adopted the phrase Queen of Mean of Connecticut, who is...
It's fitting. I could see it.
Somewhere between a mix, if Dita Von Teese and Gypsy Rose Lee were like hanging out with Audrey Hepburn and somehow ended up having like a lesbian threesome love child, that would be Kiki Lucia. So she's kiki and funny and over the top and roasts everybody who stands near her.
And quick to call you out on stage if you are standing in the front and you ain't got a dollar out.
Exactly. Or on your cell phone.
Exactly.
Or even better, the poor straight barista of mine that makes me my coffee every morning, who came to my show on Friday, who I made pick up my dollars and made fun of him the entire process of the show.
Oh, Lord have mercy.
but yeah, Kiki is also extremely, she adopts Patrick's extreme political advocacy perspective on the world and likes to use her voice to at least try to bring awareness to things.
It's pretty much like mean on a stick.
How do people age in drag years? Like dogs are like 7 years years. I feel like drag years are like add three, minus four.
I mean, it
four.
Depends on who you are. I mean, some people seem to regress the longer they
That's
do drag.
That's what I figured it was. It's like,
like
you get
they
a
don't
year
get
older,
better,
but
they
you
get worse.
4 years, yeah.
No, I mean, I think that it really depends on what you're doing and what you're putting into it, to be completely honest. I think, you know, we're in a world where drag has been kind of this explosive art form that is being dictated in many different directions. And a lot of people that have no idea anything about the art of drag have very strong opinions about what you are doing or not doing. And I think it just, it really, you know, I feel like I'm an old drag queen because I've been in the drag scene for so long, but even though I've only been performing for a few years, I've been around drag since I was 18 years old. And I turn 33 tomorrow. So that's a really long time.
Well,
congratulations.
Yeah, she really said she really meant 23. So let me ask you. So favorite drag queen?
Like in what context?
In the world. Just period. Who's your favorite drag queen performer?
That's really hard. You're going to put me on the spot like that?
Yes, I am.
So if I was going to like go see any queen, like if there was just like, blah, queen, blah, blah, blah. I absolutely adore Head of Lettuce.
I love Head of Lettuce.
I love Head of Lettuce. And Sky Casper like ropes me in anytime she's going to be here. He always messaged me. He's like, hey, I just booked Head of Lettuce for this date. And I'm like, circle that date in my calendar.
Even my boss knows who she is.
I love Head of Lettuce. I just think that she's this fabulous combination of old school drag, new school drag. She's vulgar and inappropriate, but she's not afraid to like stand up and be like, no, this is wrong. And this is why, and I'm going to use my voice to change why this is wrong. And she's creative and talented. And you know what? The girl's been doing that. Did you know Hedda Lettuce was in Tu Wong Fu?
Yes.
Like,
yes.
Not looking anything like she looks
no,
like,
no, along with...
Just saying, girl. But
along with Kateria Reyes, who played Lady Kateria. Well, she did. Her persona was Lady Kateria at Escuelita for many years in the city. She was also in there.
Coco Peru was in it.
Coco Peru was in it.
But then the best is they do this like one quick shot over to the judges, and Lady Bunny is there wearing a shake and go.
Oh, God, I love that movie. we know who your favorite drag queen is, Hedda Lettuce.
I do love Hedda
Lettuce. Who is your favorite drag queen as a boy? Who's the cutest, do you think?
Oh, God, that's so hard.
I have one in particular.
Just tell me who.
Just does it for me. Varla Jean Merman.
Varla Jean Merman.
He's amazing.
I adore Varla Jean Merman. I was really bummed that I didn't get to go see her up in Hartford yesterday because Varla is brilliantly hilarious.
What a freaking hunk, though.
Oh,
as a man, I was like, oh,
but you know what? There are so many pretty drag boys in the world. And, you know, one of the best things I think. The best things that I learned about myself doing drag is...
It's not Sylvia.
What?
Fucking Trish.
I know.
It's like texting. Anyway.
Go away, Trish. Go drink more with your grandmother.
Well, she was confused because she didn't know where we got this week's gay talk term from.
It's
in the book.
Jesus. I thought we got it all the way from... UnicornBooty.com!
Not really.
No, but like one of the best things that I've... For anybody who doesn't know on the show, I know both of you know this, but I grew up in the Middle East, which created many layers of masculinity issues within myself, which is really ironic because in Turkish culture, like masculinity is like this very weird concept. You know, men are very friendly with each other and there's like layers of masculinity and blah, blah, blah. But anyway, I had a lot of masculinity issues for a really, really, really long time. And I even remember, I think I was like 22 and I was like, I will never date a drag queen. And then
she became one.
And then I became one. And actually, true story, when I came out to my mother at 26, I literally said the line to her, well, mom, it's not like I'm walking down the street in a dress. Also, that happened. And my mom now sends me a birthday card for Kiki every year, in addition to Patrick.
That's amazing, though.
No, my mother like loves that I do drag. It's amazing. But it like literally one of the best things that happened about me starting to do drag was it just like broke down all of those stupid expectations around masculinity in like such a beautiful way and made me a better feminist, a better like anti-misogyny women's rights activist. And it also just made me appreciate the kind of silliness of masculinity and how like we just need to like get over ourselves. And
so now answer the question. Who is your favorite?
I don't know. That's really hard. I mean, are we talking tops or bottoms? Are we talking like
it doesn't matter. Who do you see as a drag queen that you would say as a boy or a man in their man form? You just say, oh my god, I'm just.
Oh. Is it fucking Trish?
Yes. Clock it like a peace eye.
Hold on. All I have to say is, one, you're all fucking nailing it. This is an amazing episode. But this week's Gay Talk term was brought to you by
UnicornBooty.com.
We already covered that, Trish.
All right. I missed it. All right. Love you. Bye.
I can't. Anyway.
She's a goddamn mess.
So go ahead.
I plead the fifth.
Okay. So she pleads the fifth. All right. So one final question.
Okay.
Who's a drag queen you hate the most?
Oh, no, I definitely am not answering that question.
Okay.
That is a shoot yourself in the foot, never get a booking question to answer.
Or like, okay,
I'm calling Robert Mueller on your ass.
I would say maybe the most underrated drag queen, in my opinion, Karen Pence. Like, she brought light to the second family. You know, she's working close with our vice president, who seems to be so much against it. So we commend you, Karen Pence.
You know, when we were talking about Marlon Brando, didn't his daughter buy the book?
Yes, his daughter did buy the book. Not Marlon Brando's daughter, Mike Pence and drag queen Karen Pence's daughter bought John Oliver's book.
John Oliver's book. And the reason why she bought it?
Because she was saying that it's for common goods. It's for charity, so we should all work together.
So you know what? I think...
Tell your dad and your drag queen mom then.
Yeah, please figure something out with
your
dad.
You know, it's a generational change.
Yeah.
Yes, so, exactly.
Claps,
exactly.
I think she deserves claps, you know, because that's...
We shouldn't assume she's a bitch. That's not
exactly.
fair.
Exactly.
That's
not fair. We don't know. We don't know. So, all right. So, let's move on into On This Day in Gay History.
On This Day in Gay History, brought to you, of course, by UnicornBooty.com. Are you happy, Trish? Are you happy, Trish? Are you happy now?
Cut her.
Let me put my glasses on for this one. Yeah, so we're going to go ahead and leave the United States for a moment on this day in gay history. Back March 26, 2009, in Serbia... The Serbian parliament approved anti-discrimination laws. The new law prohibits discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation and transgender status in all areas.
That's amazing.
That really is. Especially
and when you think about, you know,
a nation like Serbia.
Serbia was associated with Russia at some point in time, right?
Well, the Yugoslav region.
Yeah.
That whole area. Okay.
But it was definitely under the Iron Curtain.
Well, in Kosovo. And
Kosovo, yep. And which became its own nation off of Serbia.
But I'm trying to geographically place myself here.
It's Eastern Europe.
Yes. Okay. Eastern Europe.
So it was under the Iron Curtain during the Soviet Union.
Okay,
and
that's amazing.
And
though.
Serbia was an ally ally of the German Empire in both World Wars.
Oh wow, I didn't know that.
Maybe not the Second World War. I might be like lying about the Second World War.
Yeah, I don't know if Serbia. Actually
they were definitely under the control of the Nazis in the Second World War. I can't remember if they started off as an ally or not, but they were World War One. They were part of the bridge that went across Europe. That was Germany, Austria, all of essentially
the Austria-Hungarian.
Yeah, and then the Ottoman Empire.
Mm-hmm. And the Ottoman Empire ended in the
Turkey
50s.
No lies.
No.
Yeah. So lies? After World War One,
that's when it all disintegrated.
Yeah, after World War One, the European allies that won World War One dissected the country into six regions that they occupied, raped, pillaged, and forced people out of their homes, which resulted in May 19th, 1919, Atatürk, the founder of the Turkish Republic, left Istanbul after meeting with the Pasha, who said that he, under no circumstance, was going to stand up against Europe, and started the War of Independence, which ended in 1921, I forget the exact date, when the Turkish Constitution was signed in and formed the modern Turkey, or Turkish Republic.
Exactly when the Ottoman Empire ended, you're saying it's in the 20s.
1918 was when the war ended.
The war ended in 1918. Technically, the Ottoman Empire existed until like 1921-ish.
Okay. All right. I just went through a history class, but I don't remember that much. So I'm just trying to make sure that I keep it in here because, girls, you know, shit just goes.
You were doing World Civ. They weren't talking allies and central powers in World
Civ.
Well,
and despite the fact that the Ottoman Empire existed from 1299 till 1921 and, you know, managed to conquer everything between Spain and India doesn't seem to make a blip on the world history map for some reason.
I fucking love it. This is why I always love having you on the show because you always teach us such amazing like little like tips and facts, and it's amazing.
You're random just, pieces of history.
You are just like a freaking full of just you really cool things.
Ottoman Empire fun fact.
Yeah, hello.
In like I think it was between about 1350 and 16 and change, in the Ottoman Empire, it was commonly believed that the only true form of love was between homosexuals and lesbians, because you could not create children, so therefore there was nothing to gain from the love.
Oh.
Well, look at that.
Check that out. You know, she's just full of amazing things, and evidently so are her pants. Damn Captain Moose Knuckle. All right. So we have some announcements. So I'll kick it off. So if you listen, we're going to bring this home. So if you love the show, you can help us in one of three ways to let others know about the show and ensure that it becomes more visible within our podcasting community. The first thing you can do is subscribe to the show. By doing so, you get the latest and greatest of our show delivered right to your favorite device or web browser as soon as it is published. You can rate or review our show. You can do so on iTunes, on the Apple Podcast app. You can do so on Google Play Music for our Android listeners, as well as Stitcher Radio, TuneIn, Podbean, and any other podcasting app available. And lastly, you can support us on Patreon. We are on Patreon, and basically it's a service that allows you, our listeners, or anyone, donate to our cause, donate to our show, help us financially. Anything as little as a dollar helps us go a long way. So, Christopher?
And if you're feeling extra charitable, you can give one more dollar, so maybe Tom can turn the heat up down here, because I'm pretty sure he's chilling steaks behind me. Yes. I'm fucking cold down
me
here.
Me too.
Thank you. I'm like sitting with my lap, no, my hands.
And I was sitting here thinking, like, am I crazy? But then I looked over at you, and you're like huddled into like a...
I'm like, literally, there's like ribeyes and fillets behind me.
Now I will turn it
up. God, no, so please, but I give that extra dollar, people.
It's set to 64, Jesus. No, but you know,
but
I got...
we're underground right now.
Exactly.
That's true. But it's going to be amazing in the summertime, though, when I have that, you know, true central story. Air going. And, oh, it's going to be nice and fresh down here. Nobody's going to be sweating balls. Your camel toe's going to be nice and dry. Wait, moose knuckle.
Sorry. Stay with it.
So, anyway.
He has the camel toe.
Go for it, Chris.
Shall we? Next week, we welcome Rob Sanders, author of Pride, the story of Harvey Milk and the Rainbow Flag. His first nonfiction work illustrated by Stephen Salerno. We also have the return of From Top to Bottom with Dr. Evan Goldstein, our monthly segment highlighting a short 5-minute tip on healthy bottoming do's and don'ts.
I'm super excited for both. I'm excited because, you know, one of my favorite figures within the LGBT community is Harvey Milk and the work that he did in San Francisco. It's very important work. And of course, you know, I'm freaking in love with Dr. Evan Goldstein and everything that he brings to the show, because he's just amazing. And I love that he's so candid and so crazy and so... he's not afraid to call it what it is, you know?
Did you know that San Francisco is changing the name of their terminal to the Harvey Milk Terminal?
I did not know this.
That was announced over the weekend.
That's amazing.
That's great news.
I'm excited. We're going to have to definitely look into that and report on that when it happens. Do you know any idea?
I don't know when they're dedicating it or anything, but it was announced over the weekend.
I think it was something about when Tom turns the heat up.
Yeah, I think it is something about that.
It's going to go up. But anyway.
But you know, who is it? Mark Twain always said that the coldest winter he ever experienced was the summer in San Francisco.
That is true.
And then we all came to Tom's basement.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, the studio, bro. The studio. I keep it nice and cold. Keep you awake. Christopher.
Can we put a fucking rubber on this, please?
Wait, no. We can't put a fucking rubber on it.
Oh, damn it. I cut you off.
Because I have one more thing that I need to do. I want to thank our guest, Patrick Dunn, for joining us on today's episode. As I said before, anytime that you come on the show, it is just an absolute pleasure, and we want to thank you for contributing to our show today.
Well, thank you.
In Nick's absence, especially.
And of course, Anthony Christie for joining us and giving us that amazing rundown of what's going on right now in our state. Make sure that you contact your senators. Don't forget to do that. And now, Christopher.
That first one snapped. I got another one here. Can we put this rubber on it?
Yes, please.
All righty. As always, our show is available on our website, gaytalk20.com, under show and episodes. It is also available as a free download on iTunes, Google Play Music, and Stitcher Radio.
All right. Since Nick is not here, Patrick.
You can find Gay Talk 2.0 on social media, Facebook, Gay Talk 2.0, Instagram, Gay Talk 2.0, Twitter, at Gay Talk 2.0.
Or 20.
Gay 20, Talk 20.
Or email gaytalk2.0@gmail.com.
Tom, do you want to plug yourself before that?
No, it's okay.
You sure?
Yeah. You can. Nick would have been sending me. Nick would have sent a text like, "Tell him to plug himself. Tell him to plug himself. Jingle bells. Jingle bells." Like,
oh my god, Dave. All right. Well, if you need to reach out to us, you can head on over to our website, click on the Contact Us tab at the top of your web browser where you can leave comments, suggest topics, submit questions for the cast, submit questions for an individual person or host, or you can send us an email regarding any of our guests and we'll make sure that message gets to them. And you can also call us and leave us a voice message. We can take those questions and answer them for you on the show. The phone number is 203.
No.
No, it's not 203. It's an Alabama number, 334-GAY-TALK. And if you need the numbers, that's 334-429-8255. Don't forget that we stream live every Monday at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And you can access that live stream at digitalstreamradio.com. Ladies and gentlemen, that is our show. Thank you. And y'all have a good night. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Gay Talk 2.0. Tune in next time for more Dish.